RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Good morning, Richmond. Michael Phillips here, MP on the mic, back at you for another edition. So yesterday we weren't on the air because the Flying Squirrels were on. Congrats to the Squirrels. Big win for them. Massive news yesterday. And look, you never know what to believe online, but I saw Max Shulga's coming back to VCU for another season, and I thought, that's not right. He's going to Villanova.
That's what I don't know sports, but I knew that.
But he is coming back.
Oh, wow.
It's not fake news.
How'd that change?
Max Shulga's back.
Oh, my gosh.
We got to go into that extensively in about half an hour, and we will. But I want to start in Ashburn yesterday, because I was up in Ashburn yesterday for the fifth OTA practice. This one was the second, open to reporters. Had a chance to go up, watch the Washington Commanders. We will play my interview with Cleland Farrell, the Pride of Richmond, and now Commanders defensive end, briefly, maybe in about 15 minutes from now. Also, you'll hear from some of the other members of the team, Coach Dan Quinn, etc. We got 2 hours with you. Phone lines are open, 833-804-0910 on the Thursday program. Looking forward to having Lane Cassidante on at 11 o'clock, as we do on Thursdays. But here's where I want to start. When I worked for the newspaper, which I did for a long time, we did practice observations. Basically, I wrote things down and then people read them, you know. It wasn't fully formed thoughts. It's just, you know, here's some things I noticed. So I took the notebook out there. That's how I watch practice. I write things down, make little observations. So we'll do some practice observations, and I'll tell you about what I saw and what I think this team is turning into at the moment. So we'll dive into that. Thank you to Megan for filling in as producer today. I think back tomorrow, most likely, would be my guess as well.
Most likely.
This is going to be fun. Fun couple days here as we take it into the holiday weekend. I want to start with Jaden Daniels, because I think that's obviously where everybody has the most interest and the most curiosity. And I'll acknowledge straight up, limited sample size of what I'd call competitive snaps yesterday, right? We watch training camp. They practice every day, 2 hours every day. At the end of a week, you've got a feel of, all right, I saw him do a lot of things, a lot of concepts, a lot of throws, and we can kind of sort them into buckets. So if I tell you, like, and as I'm going to tell you in a bit, there were a couple throws kind of cross field, they're making, you know, testing his arm that it looked like he was kind of laboring into. I'm not saying he has a problem with that throw. Just yesterday, you know, at the end of a very hot, it was very hot out there yesterday, and a very hot practice, he was laboring into that throw, the kind of cross body, cross field throw, which is a very tough throw for an NFL player to make. You don't take it all with a grain of salt, is what I'm saying. Big grain of salt today. That said, I want to start with the positives on Jaden Daniels, because in person, that ball zips. He gets it out. The motion is clean. The fluid, the ball snaps out of his hand. It's got some very nice zip to it. He made some very nice throws. The one made the rounds online through the Commander's social media. So we can't take video of what's going on. The team does. They usually release the highlights. He had a great throw to Jahan Dotson that certainly made the rounds on social media. On that throw, by the way, Terry McLaurin, who is definitely now a vocal leader, like he was last year too, but but he's a vocal guy now. He comes over. He starts pumping up Jahan after that throw. And Terry's kind of pumping guys up all day, but you could tell you a little something extra for Jahan, who I have not given up on, certainly. But it's an important year for him. I think everybody sees that. Terry comes over, he starts yelling at him, "That's what I told you. You win at the line with your hands." And you could tell that, right, that's something Jahan's been focusing on, the hand placement, getting that first step. And Terry's complimenting him. You won that route, first step, right out of the gate. A very impressive route from Jahan Dotson. Put himself in position to make the catch, a contested catch, and Jaden put the ball exactly where it needed to be. There were some very nice throws from Jaden Daniels. He's fun to watch. Number two thing about Jaden Daniels, he is a hard worker. And yes, he's in the NFL. He was the number two draft pick. What you hear from people there is, this guy is putting in the hours, putting in the work. He is getting there early. He is leaving late. He is putting in the iPad time, the playbook time, all of that. Now, that's not, what's the term? Table stakes. That's table stakes. Like that, you have to do that to have a chance to be a good NFL player. That if you put in the work, it doesn't mean you will be a great NFL player. That's the minimum. That's where it starts. But not everybody's out there doing that. And he is doing it, and they respect that. I also appreciated, it was a very crisp practice. He knew every time what the play was, what he'd be doing. You could tell he had been paying attention. He knew the practice plan. He knew each throw. He knew what he needed to do. And he was, on the whole, largely very proficient about putting the ball where it needed to be. He threw an interception at one point where I think he was experimenting with what he could do off the scramble. He was scrambling, and he tried to get a receiver in a scramble drill. And he was too close to the out-of-bounds line, the receiver was, and so the defensive back was able to slide in and made a very impressive interception, which is good for the defense. I think Jaden was learning on that one. Best praise I saw from Cliff Kingsbury to Jaden Daniels, they did, at the end, a simulated, they'll set up a game situation, put about a minute on the clock, put them at about midfield, and no timeouts. And so Jaden Daniels was working under that situation. He got him to about the 30, and then, he had about 10 seconds left. He scrambles for a minute, nothing was open, didn't force the throw, threw it out of bounds right away to preserve the clock. Cliff Kingsbury was very happy with that decision. Came where he said, good awareness, right? We've got a field goal. Getting it closer won't get us, won't get us anything if the clock runs out. Cliff was fired up that Jaden made a really good in-game decision, right? You call that the Madden decisions, right? Because it always infuriates me. NFL coaches need to play an hour of Madden every day so they get better at clock management, because we all see it at home. They don't see it. That was a Madden decision by Jaden Daniels. He knew the time, he knew the score, he knew the situation. He got out, let McManus take the kick. Let the field goal team come on. He was very thrilled with that. Dan Quinn was over with the receivers at that moment. He was very unhappy with the receivers and the urgency they were showing in getting to the line and getting set, because one of the plays in the sequence, the clock had run on, and he felt the receivers were not getting set quickly enough back on the line to start the next play. And usually the receivers aren't the ones holding it up, right? You got to get the offensive line set. Jane's got to get set. The receivers are kind of ancillary to the whole thing. He was insistent at all 11 guys, full hustle, get back to your spot, get ready. So he's drilling the details there. That's Jaden Daniels. He's fun to watch. He's putting in the work. Who knows what it'll all mean? And obviously we're not seeing this with a live pass rush as we will, but I thought he looked good. It was fun to watch him. Standing next to Marcus Mariota, Jaden's got a lighter frame than Marcus Mariota does. I was hoping to see a guy who kind of physically fit in at that position. I think I probably still have concerns about injuries and his size and how it plays at the NFL level. That said, he's coming into the league at a great time to do that. Because you take you back, the RG3 era with the read option, Colin Kaepernick with the Wildcat, it used to be these mobile quarterbacks, and obviously Cam Newton pointed it out loudly once, it's the black quarterbacks, right? The ones who run, the ones who are mobile, don't get the same protections as pocket quarterbacks do, who are very protected. Now, the NFL stance on that for a long time, right, was once you start running, if defense wants to light you up, they can have fun, even if you're not the actual ball carrier, even if you pitch it or toss it. That's changed a lot. Quarterbacks are now much better protected, including mobile quarterbacks, when they get out of the pocket. I think Jaden will be way more protected by the officials, by the rules, than he would have been had he come along 7, 8, 10 years ago into the NFL. I think that will benefit him. Still a bit of a question mark for me. We'll see. And a lot of that depends on the offensive line and how they get rolling as well. What was also interesting to me about Jaden Daniels was, and you know, he wasn't vocally leading, because I think the coaches were doing that, and the coaches are installing their plans. But Jaden's leading a group of guys who are largely much older than him. You think about the quarterback being the leader of the whole team, and your other leaders, right, are Ertz and Wagner, and you've got some older guys. Even Terry and John Allen are getting significantly older. Jaden's young, and that's a big ask of a young guy to come in unproven into a team that's going to have low expectations this year and lead. And I'm curious to see how that plays out. But I get the sense there's a lot of respect for him in that building already. Not just the perfunctory, right? Everybody always compliments their teammates when asked. I get the sense there's a very real respect for Jaden Daniels, for the work he's putting in, for his efforts to lift this team and to get ready. The receivers, I wrote this down. Here's what I wrote down. Receivers 3 through 7 suck. We'll unpack it. I thought Jahan had a very nice day. As mentioned, I think he's putting in the work to improve. I don't have to tell you Terry McLaurin's good at what he does. Big question marks beyond that. And that's not anything about Luke McCaffrey, who I think could be good. Look, he was a late third round draft pick. And the second he was drafted, everybody's like, oh, he'll be a starter week 1. And they're not wrong, by the way. He kind of does project as the starter. That's not a reflection of like, wow, that was the steal of the draft. That's a reflection on the talent level on the team. And so they're not doing depth charts and ones and twos and all that. Generally speaking, yesterday during the action periods, Marcus Mariota got to throw to what you would consider the ones. Jaden was throwing to what you would consider the twos for a decent portion of it. And there was a lot of rotating and a lot of mixing and matching. So there's nothing to read into there at all. I know as I say that, somebody's going to hear, oh my gosh, is Marcus Mariota starting? No, he's not. But they were doing some mixing and matching. It was tough out there for the non Terry and Jahan receiving categories. And I'm talking about, your Diamis and, Dax Milnes and on down the line. They got some work to do, and they may still add another receiver before we're done here, which would not surprise me at all. Mariota, we'll hear from him on the other side of the break. Marcus Mariota, I think he's an intriguing character in this drama and all that. We'll also talk about Dan Quinn, kind of given the rundown on his approach, joint practices, a lot of things like that. So we'll wrap up Commander's observations. We're giving this a try. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Let me know on social media, Michael P. and RVA. You can also call in. It's the Thursday show. It's MP on the mic. We'll wrap up Commander's practice report after this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. 10:18, we'll run through my observations from Washington Commander's practice yesterday, OTA practice. So a lot of individual and skill work, little bit of teamwork, mostly in a 7-on-7 style format. Not a lot of offensive line, defensive line, which is very normal for this time of year. That'll be kind of early August when they start bringing the offensive and defensive lines into it. And of course, I'll be excited to see that. Dan Quinn, he was chatting. He had a few things about building leadership and continuity within the team. And then Mitch Tischler, who works for Monumental Sports, said, "Hey, yo, hey, we can move on to other things, but I have another question about the leadership stuff." And DQ goes, "Oh, we can talk about that all day. That's my favorite topic." And it is. And he's brought in motivational speakers and former, you know, military guys to do the kind of military style team building training. Very clear that he's putting a big emphasis on team building, culture, leadership. On the one hand, I think he's very good at it. He's talking a good game. He's brought in good players. We'll hear from Cleveland Farrell in a second. That's obviously important to the guys he's brought in. On the other, this isn't on Dan Quinn. This is on us. But it just feels like exactly what Ron Rivera was saying his first year. Wasn't that what Ron Rivera was here for? We're going to set a culture. People are going to be proud of this team. Brought in military people. He was an ex-military guy. I'm not saying that Dan Quinn is doing it poorly or disingenuously. I think he's doing well. It's just this weird, like, what did we do for 4 years? Like, what? I mean, we just kind of spun the tires in the mud for 4 years, like talking about culture. And now, and you'll hear it in these clips that guys are like, yeah, no, the culture is better now. What did we do for 4 years? That we'll be reckoning with that for a long time, I guess. It was very hot yesterday. Dan Quinn yelled out during a break, "It's mandatory bottle service." They're running the water around everybody. Everybody had to do that. It was hot, but it wasn't so. I mean, training camp's going to feel worse, and training camp always feels worse on the day to day. So let's play clip number three here, Brian Robinson Jr., because I think people are intrigued by the running backs. You'll also get to hear his thoughts on the culture as well, and him adapting to this new team, this new style. Here's Brian Robinson Jr.
I think it's been great for not even just me, for just, you know, everybody to kind of adjust to this coaching staff, because they've been so good just with how they connect with us, you know, and the conversations we have and the type of conversation we have in the meetings, and just, you know, just building that connection that we probably just didn't do, you know, beforehand. You know, we just ain't have the coaches or maybe the coaching staff that we felt like we can build a comfortable relationship with, so we could take that relationship, you know, from the meeting room to the practice field to the game field. So I feel like we got a jump start with that right now, thanks to Coach Quinn just allowing us to just, you know, just be more of a team. And I think that's, you know, really helping us, you know, get off to a good head start right now.
I think he's potentially in line to have a great year. I flagged this the other day. I sent this day wide. We didn't talk about it on the air. Over under on Jaden Daniels' passing yards this year on the betting sites is 3,000, which is essentially a bet on whether or not he will play 17 games or not. If he plays all the games this year, there is no chance he finishes with less than 3,000 yards. So that's the national perspective on this, right? I mentioned that. I think Brian Robinson could have a big year. I think Austin Eckler's in line for a big year. You look at quarterback passing yard over-unders, they're almost all 3,500, 3,800, 4,000. This is the lowest number I've seen for a bona fide, you know, week one starter. It's a bet on whether he's going to play all the games or not, is what that is. And if he doesn't, of course, it will be much harder to get to that point. It's hard to see him playing 17 games and not recording 3,000 passing yards. That would be its own achievement, and probably not a great one at that. Let's play the Marcus Mariota clip, though, because everybody's always intrigued by the backup quarterback. This is Marcus Mariota on the culture on being in here, and then we'll riff on that for a second.
So bring out the best out of my teammates.
You mentioned surrounding yourself with good people in this situation. It's all fairly new here. The name's new, the ownership's new, the coach. Do you think about that as a player, the chance to kind of start something and set something here?
Absolutely. I think that's part of, again, there's a lot of factors that really led to me coming here. But to be kind of a part of a new regime, you know, a new owner, new staff, new players, I think it's a great opportunity to kind of set the trajectory for a franchise. And that opportunity itself was something that I was excited to be a part of.
That part first, that part being it's setting the trajectory, because if you watched the quarterback show on Netflix last year that followed him in his year in Atlanta. He wasn't a culture guy in Atlanta. He was kind of salty and left the team midway through the season, which was one of the main points of controversy of the show, saying the right things in D.C., of course, and talked about how he wanted to be on the West Coast when the season started. That was where he wanted to sign, but he felt like this was too good of an opportunity to not come out here and take this opportunity in D.C. Obviously, there's a path to him getting on the field, and quickly, he's working with coaches he liked. The first part of the clip, which we didn't hear, we'll run that back later, was him talking about Cliff Kingsbury's offense. He said, look, you can't define it. It's not, he will create a different offense for me, for Sam, for Jaden. It's not everything in one box and roll with that box. He's got a lot of different tricks in the bag. And then Marcus Mariota also talked about how he's comfortable being a backup, and he's just there every day to bring the best out of Jaden. So all the right things, right? It's always, are you going to hear the right things? Almost certainly yes, but then, with the way things ended in Atlanta, you wonder. But so far, so good on the Marcus Mariota front, and we'll keep an eye on him, obviously. One last observation from the talking portion of the activities yesterday. Dan Quinn was talking about joint practices. Confirmed they have one in Miami. Said they're still talking with the other two teams, the Jets and the Patriots, about doing it. Now, what I like about their joint practice format here, it's one practice and then the preseason game. So in the past, teams have done 2 and 3 day joint practices with other teams, and you've seen a lot of fighting. Now, why are there so many fights at joint practices? This is actually an easy one to handle. If a player gets in a fight during a game, a regular season game or a preseason game, they get an envelope from the NFL, and they have to put a lot of money into that envelope. They get fined. But if you do it during practice, the NFL does not have the ability to fine players for what happens during practice. So you could take a swing at somebody, and you can be disciplined internally by your team, but you can't be fined or disciplined by the NFL.
Oh, that's fun.
That's why you see so much. I appreciate it. So I love it. One day of joint practices, one day, not enough time for bad blood to develop, not enough time for tensions to flare, one day down to business. I think that's very smart. Would love it if they can do that with the Jets as well. I think that makes a ton of sense. Maybe even the Patriots. One of the interesting wrinkles on that Patriots game, the third preseason game, the whole NFL wraps up their preseason on that Thursday before what used to be the traditional Saturday cut day. They've added an extra preseason game for TV, a national TV preseason game that weekend, the weekend before Labor Day. It's these guys. It's the Commanders and the Patriots. So their preseason will actually end 3 days later than everybody else's. So it does produce more time for joint practices. It produces less time for whatever you do on the other side. Generally speaking, that's not the biggest deal in the world. All right, want to play this interview with Cleland Farrell, Pride of Benedictine, Richmond guy. We had a great chat underneath an air conditioner. It was hot. He said, I've been in the sun too long. You want to get in the shade? Yeah, let's get in the shade. But the interview area was right under the air conditioner fan. So someday I'll be a good radio guy. Today was not that day. But I think you'll enjoy this chat with Cleland Farrell. And then we'll head to break, talk about VCU Max Schulga right after this.
Cleland Farrell joining us for a couple of minutes on 910 The Fan, home of the Commanders in Richmond. I'll be excited to hear you on the field week one. I'm sure you're equally excited to be back near home.
Hell yeah, I cannot wait. Happy to be home and excited for the future, for sure.
What were your emotions, reactions when you heard these guys were interested in you, and I would imagine you were interested in being here?
It was major. Humble about it regardless. It's such a blessing to have an opportunity to be in this league and to come here with Coach Tab, Adam, even Dan Quinn. It's a major blessing. I'm humbled by it. So I just take it every day and take that into consideration.
Yeah, you actually went to training camp in Richmond, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, growing up as a kid, we used to sneak in every now and then. I never stayed for a whole practice, but we used to sneak in, because I was a young kid, just wanted to see what Ryan Kerrigan looked like on the field, see what Clint Portis looked like, see what, Trent Wood, see what those guys looked like, because those was my family's favorite team. I was a Ravens fan, but, those became some of my favorite players, too.
That's awesome. So I think you'll have to stay for the whole practice now.
Yeah, for sure.
You're from somewhere else, but everybody here's from somewhere else. The coaches, the players, how do you produce that bonding?
I think that's the most beautiful thing. You know, I'm a military kid, so the aspect of having a group of young men come together from all different parts of the world is one of the biggest blessings of football, you know, because you can take that and then you all find commonalities and go through the same struggles every single day, and it makes you so much closer, and it makes you want to chase and accomplish goals that you can triumph after once you accomplish them. So it's been good. I love learning my teammates, learning the names, hanging out with them, so it's been good.
What was your time like in San Francisco, obviously getting a chance to experience as big as it gets there at the Super Bowl?
Man, I loved it, man. Coach Shanahan, John Lynch, Chris Kasherick. I mean, so many good people there that I can just take my hats off to for helping me in my career, man. Definitely, it was major for me going there. And all the guys, too, obviously, the great players that I played with. Too many on the name, but that's a great organization. Nothing but respect for them. But, you know, obviously, they are on the other side now. So it's you know, I ain't going to say too much, but they on the other side now.
Obviously, Adam Peters coming here. One of his big things is, you know, getting the right guys in and building the right culture. How do you see yourself fitting into that?
I think number one is it starts with, you know, trying to set an example for the room. I'm a person where, obviously, I know where AP and Coach Tab, our D-line coach, comes from. And I feel like for me, even with Coach Quinn, I feel like for me and my position group, you know, we have to try to set the tone for the team, the D-line. I love the aspect of that. So you start off with that just by leading by example, the way you practice, the way you work out, the way you go about your business. And I think that's something that I'm trying to just hone in on right now.
With Cleveland Farrell, the Washington Commanders, Darrell Tapp, of course, former Hokie, a lot of good Virginia ties here.
Yeah.
He brings the enthusiasm every day.
Yeah, every single day. It's needed. But that's what I love about it, because what we do is not easy, and it's not for everybody. And it's a privilege to be a part of this group. So, you know, at the end of the day, I love that he gives his all every single day. That way the players who take it seriously will have a chance to be on this team and have a chance to, you know, make the career that they want to have.
Last thing for Cleveland Farrell here. You know the franchise's history, the glory days. A lot of this is trying to recreate that, right? Trying to get back to the top of that mountain. What does DQ talk to you about that? Is that on your guys' minds that, you know, this is a sleeping giant, so to speak? Yeah, you got to wake it up.
Well, yeah, 100%. I think, you know, what happened in the past is something that we can reflect on and obviously understand of where we come from. I think the thing that, you know, we're really big about in DQ for sure is that, you know, it's not about trying to replicate things. Is definitely more so about trying to reinvent the wheel. So we try to set our own standard. You know, this group of guys, we're not trying to be like the old guys. We're not trying to be like other teams in the league. We kind of want to start something new. And, you know, obviously doing it here with a historic franchise is major. It's a place that I grew up at. I think, you know, whatever we want to do and set our mind to, we can do it. We just have to be about the work. So,
got those ticket requests in?
Too many.
You have a lot of them.
Too many. They will have to pay for them.
He's got 8 siblings, and of course, a lot of family. They'll be very interested in making that drive up 95 on Sundays to watch Cleveland Farrell play. And I think if the season started tomorrow, he'd be a starter on the defensive line. Him and Dorrance Armstrong, who came from Dallas. You know, I got an eye on KJ Henry as well. I think he developed really nicely as the year went along last year. It's a wide open position. It's going to be a really fun training camp because of that. So yesterday, DraftKings released the lines for every NFL game this season, all 272 games. They put the early lines up. Now, you know, this is just how they forecast it happening. The Washington Commanders are favored 3 times this season on the DraftKings line. So if you, my thought is always, right, if you put money on all the games right now, and they finish with 4 or more wins, you end up on the positive side of that ledger. That said, it is tough to see them as favorites in any individual game, right? Because you got Tampa in the opener. Sure, they could win that game. They're not going to be favored in it. They will be favored against the Giants week 2 at home, Carolina week 7 at home, and Tennessee week 13 at home. But they will be underdogs. They will be getting points in every other game this season. Only 2 NFL games right now with a spread of more than 10 points. Now, that'll change once the games start. But only 2 NFL games right now across the league have a spread of more than 10 points. San Francisco hosting New England. That will be a bloodbath. Absolutely. That's an easy one to call right there. San Francisco, New England's going to be. There's a lot of people will be tuning out of that game pretty early. And then the other one, you've got Baltimore hosting Denver, which surprises me because I think that there's the Denver defense is still solid, although the offense obviously has a lot to be desired in light of running their quarterback and then not having a quarterback available to you in your draft position and settling for Bo Nix. That will be a fascinating season to watch out there in Denver. Quarter of the way done with the Thursday program. It's MP on the mic. You know where to find us, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. Worldwide on the free Odyssey app and on all major podcast platforms. You type in MP on the mic, we'll beam it straight to you every day as soon as the live show is over here. We are the home of the Rams, and we got VCU basketball news. Before we do that, shout out to both the Rams and the Spiders baseball teams, the only two teams remaining in the winner's bracket at the A-10 baseball tournament up in Northern Virginia. They will be playing tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. The winner of that will go to the championship game and a shot at the automatic bid into the NCAA baseball tournament. So, Spiders Rams on the baseball diamond tomorrow up in Northern Virginia. High stakes game up there before an exciting weekend. We'll tell you what's going on tomorrow, and I'm sure Awad will keep an eye on the situation during his program as well. Awad Radio, noon to 3 each day before Grant and Danny drive you home. Grant and Danny drove me home from D.C. yesterday because I was up in Ashburn. Got to hear the end of the Nats game. 3-2 Nats loss. I don't get torn up with the day-to-day of the Nats losses. And, you know, home run in the ninth inning made it fun. We'll do the Squirrels update in a bit. They're playing well. They're off to a great start on the road.
Because we love the Squirrels.
Do you? Good to know.
I love the Squirrels.
Love the Squirrels. We do love the Squirrels. They'll be back tonight with Trey and Blaine after the Grant and Danny program, of course. Richmond Ivy in action tonight, their second game. Richmond's most successful team of all time any sport by winning percentage.
Really? I didn't know that.
They've played one game and they won it.
Oh wait. Never mind. Never mind.
1-0.
I just look silly now.
1-0 all time.
1-0.
Nobody.
That is the best.
Nobody has a better winning percentage all time. Richmond sports any division than the Ivy. One game up on VCU football. Which hasn't lost but also hasn't won. Ivy's got the W. That's the that's the distinguishing factor there. So I mentioned yesterday, I saw the news item. It was Max Schulga on his Instagram. Photoshop. It's him in the VCU jersey. That wasn't Photoshop. The SPS pictures of him in a VCU jersey. You know, I didn't even have to do the edits. And the bag said, "I'm back." And I, you know, Twitter, you can't believe everything you see on Twitter these days at all. I thought somebody was doing an elaborate bit.
Trying to trick you.
He's back. Max Schulga committed to Villanova.
Okay.
And the reporting out of Philly was planning to move in next week, and the coaches did not sense anything was amiss, or at least didn't say they sensed anything was amiss. Got what we can presume is a very healthy NIL payout from Villanova, right? Remember the UR kid, Tyler, I'm blanking on his other name. I'm blanking on his name. That's all right, though. But he went last year to Villanova, and that was a big payout for him, and that was a big part of why he went. And of course, Villanova, Big East school, they've got Tyler Burton. There we go. I wasn't going to continue until I figured it out. Tyler Burton, of course, left UR, went up to Villanova, got a big payout, certainly in the six figures. Was the word from there. Now with Max Schulga, there were a lot of directions he could have gone because he did the NBA pre-draft circuit. He is Ukrainian. I think he could have played in Europe and made six figures to play in Europe. Mm-hmm. I also think in the current college sports environment, you'd be a little crazy to leave that money on the table. Play another year of college basketball, make six figures, and certainly, you know, the fun that comes with playing college basketball. It's fun. Now, we've seen this, right? We saw this already this season where VCU got a commitment, then lost the commitment. Was it Jamari Thomas? I'm blanking on names. That's all right. Jamari Thomas, yes, who was from Norfolk State, MEAC Player of the Year, committed to VCU in the portal, and then said a couple days later, oh, South Carolina offered me more money. I'm going there. And let's clear this up right now so that nobody puts words into my mouth. I am freaking thrilled that Max Schulga is back.
Yeah?
I have no feelings other than immense joy that we will be watching another season of Max Schulga playing basketball at the Stew. That said, when Jamari Thomas left VCU, made a commitment, and then left to South Carolina, I said, I don't like this. I don't like the uneasiness of, like, are guys committed, not committed? And it's still squishy. We need a better system than this, because high school kids sign a national letter of intent when they get a scholarship offer. So they say, I'm going to go play at this school. The coaches know they're coming. They account for the scholarship. The kid has, you know, it's a legally binding agreement. The kid's going to play there, and the school's going to offer him a scholarship. Everybody knows the score. This portal world is not like that. Villanova made him a big offer. Apparently, he decided to come back to VCU. I can only assume somebody stepped up to the plate here. Thank you, whoever did that. But this whole, like, it, you know, you have to enroll for it to be official. Well, you're going to have a lot of poaching going on if this system's allowed to continue, because nothing's official until it's official. We got the lawsuit, the Georgia quarterback suing the Florida coach. We're going to have a lot of issues here if our plan in the transfer portal is guys can commit to a new school, but it's not legally binding. We're going to need to work on that leg of the portal situation probably pretty urgently. But Max Schulga's back. Let's not lose sight of
Schulga's back.
What we're here for. Max is back. If you roll out the ball tomorrow, you're starting five. Max and Zeb, Joe Bam. I think Jack Clark is an immediate starter at the four, and Christian Furman at the five. I only have two question marks there. One is, can we get another five in? Nothing against Christian Furman. Need some height, need some size. We saw that in the A-10 last year. Not easy to find. Obviously, Jack Clark, huge boost inside, and we'll enjoy watching him play. Joe Bam is still, the consistency is the question, right? The talent is undeniable, and he will be a fan favorite if he hits threes. He hits those Caitlin Clark style threes, right? And everybody loses their mind. That's fun. People like that. That's a good. That's an A-10 contending starting lineup right there. Max and Zeb, Joe Bam, Jack Clark, Christian Furman. My only real question there is at the five. I think you've got yourself a team here. Although it's college basketball now. Stay tuned minute to minute. Things change. Things always change. But you know, if Jamari Thomas were still there, I mean, you'd be loaded with guards. You'd be talking about maybe even playing, you know, four guards and Jack Clark, right? Trying to figure out how you're going to make that work. I don't know that you can do that night in, night out. He's not here. No point crying over spilled milk. It's a solid lineup, and health is everything, of course. We learned that with Max and Sean Bairstow last year. But you can't say Ryan Odom didn't go to work in the portal. Here's the other thing I notice, because people are talking about the portal and college basketball and saying, oh, well, you know, these are going to become feeder schools for the major schools, right? Guys are going to come to VCU, be good for a couple years, and then they'll be off to Kentucky, Villanova, wherever they're off to. Next year's roster, VCU, run down that, right? Max Schulga, fifth year. Zeb Jackson, fifth year. Joe Bamisil, however you want to score that. He's been around for a long time. I guess 5 years is how you score that. Jack Clark, obviously, what is it, seventh year? And then Firm, who's a VCU-developed guy. There's a ton of experience on that roster. Those are some old dudes. These are guys who, few years ago wouldn't have been eligible to be playing college ball, and now you got some fifth year, some seventh year. You got some experience on this team as well, which I don't think was a given in this climate where you say, okay, VCU's job is to develop young talent and then send it off. They got some veteran talent, and you win with experience. They'll test that next year, right? You win with experience. Does that mean you can win with mercenary experience? I don't know. But you've got the foundation of a team that knows each other pretty well, and I think looks good, minus my question mark at the five. But I'm not dwelling on that today. You know why? Because Max Schulga's back. You got yourself a bit of a lineup there. I love the Jack Clark pickup. I love picking up Schulga late in the game as much as, what is it, don't hate the player, hate the game? I kind of hate the game right now. I don't like the game anymore today, even though, look, big payout for the Rams. Love VCU being able to reel Max back in. I still don't like the game at all, but I like the player a lot. I like where we're at. VCU basketball, of course, the off-season summer workouts will be here before you know it. We're back with more in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll bring on Lane Casadante. I always love to hear from Lane at CBS6. He'll probably have thoughts on that as well. My interview with Cleland Farrell of the Washington Commanders from yesterday at practice as well. All that on the other side of this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. I'm glad Megan's here today, because you're a bona fide musician, which is great.
Yeah.
You can wait. The Junkies were talking about this, too. Apple Music came out with their list of the 100 best albums of all time. And I'm a sucker for a list, to start with. But I'm definitely a sucker for a musical list.
Oh, me too. And I have not seen the list yet, so this is going to be all new to me. I can't wait to hear it.
This is fresh. Now, I'm a believer when you talk about lists. I'm good with starting at one and going down as opposed to counting up. Because there are so many albums, you're not going to be like, oh, this one. And I don't want to start at 100 because we've only got one segment here. We got to get moving.
I mean, I don't think Clifford will mind.
Clifford told me we don't have to run ads today.
Yeah, we don't have to run ads.
So thanks for that, Clifford.
Sorry, Brian.
Squirrels update coming in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll also talk to Lane Casadante, of course, as we do on Thursdays. Number one album of all time by the Apple Music panel, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, by Lauryn Hill. It's a very good album.
Okay. I did not expect that to be number one, though.
I didn't expect it to be that recent, right?
Yeah.
That recent. But she's got the history going back. You know, she's been on the musical scene for a long time. Mm. I don't object. It's a great album. I might have gone with the number two album as the greatest album of all time.
Okay, can I guess the number two?
Sure. Yeah, throw some darts here. See if you can hit.
Is the number two that dumb, like, U2 album that Apple gave everyone for free, and that's why it's that high up, like, years ago?
That would diminish the entire list for sure.
It would.
U2 did not make the top 10.
Okay.
It's still great at the Sphere, so that... I will never take away my love of the Sphere. Michael Jackson was number two. Thriller, of course.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. He's up there.
You can't argue with that selection. Mm-hmm. Number three, the Beatles' Abbey Road.
Okay.
Where they're walking across the street. Yeah. So I think everybody's good so far. Number four, Prince, Purple Rain.
Okay.
So that's your top four. Lauryn Hill, Michael Jackson, the Beatles, Prince.
I'm kind of surprised Lauryn Hill beat, like, those three.
Beat everything of all time.
Because I mean I don't really like listen to Lauryn Hill, so I guess I don't really have a good judgment on how big she is, but
very big.
Yeah.
But great albums, like, everybody's gonna bring their own criteria.
Yeah.
Nirvana's number nine when we get to them.
Okay.
Like, to me, a great album, like, changes the course of music. Like, people play it so much it creates a new sound, or like the Beatles changed music.
Yeah.
They introduced pop music in a lot of ways. Michael Jackson, the showmanship, changed music forever. Did the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill change music? Mm. I think you could argue that hip hop sound was already very popular. She did it as well as anybody's ever done it.
Yeah.
I don't know there was a game changing out. Prince is interesting too, because he had such a unique sound. I wouldn't say that there's a ton of Prince copycats out there either.
That's true.
He kind of just existed in his own world. All right. Well, all of which is to set up number five, which is the first jaw-dropper stunner to me.
Oh, no.
Frank Ocean. Blonde. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not shocked that he's up there, but I don't think I would have put him at number five.
I mean, if you want rap, hip-hop representation, I just think you got a lot of better choices. I love the album.
Yeah.
Big fan of the album.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Dre?
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of options there.
There's a lot.
Frank Ocean at number five on a list of the best albums of all time ever.
Mm.
That's a spicy take to me.
That's a very spicy take, Apple. Are they basing this off of the listeners?
No, they convened a panel of music experts to make this determination, which is the best way to do things like this. Because anytime you go, like, these are by listens, like, it's going to be skewed. You need experts. This is absolutely the correct situation to bring in an expert panel. Like when they do NFL, like 100 best players, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like statistically driven. You got to have a panel.
Yeah, you want someone that like knows their stuff and can really judge the quality and, you know.
Stevie Wonder at six.
Okay.
Kendrick Lamar at seven. Amy Winehouse at eight. Back to Black.
Mm.
Nirvana's Nevermind at nine. And Beyonce's Lemonade at 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
I probably would have chosen a different Beyonce album, to be honest.
That's the album right after Jay-Z cheated on her. I agree she's got better albums.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that's just for the significance of...
It might be.
Like, her, like, publicly processing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jay-Z cheating on Beyonce. Like, that's a big moment in, like, gossipy music.
Pop culture, yeah.
Pop culture
history. That is a very big moment in pop culture history.
And them getting together at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Want to do the next five here?
Let's do it.
We swing it back to rock here. Fleetwood Mac.
Yes.
Rumors. OK Computer by Radiohead at 12.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know that great album. I don't know that started anything. Like, that electronic sound never really...
I feel like there's better albums.
Jay-Z, The Blueprint at 13.
Okay.
If anything, that's low. That's a great album. Bob Dylan, Highway 61 Revisited. Mm. You play the guitar. Are you in on Bob Dylan at all?
No, I actually don't have him on my set list.
Yeah.
No,
just in general, though.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
That's kind of like, it's one of those things where, like, people are like, you know, you go to the Louvre or whatever, and it's like, this is the Mona Lisa. This is one of the greatest paintings of all time. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like somebody painted a woman. Yeah.
Yep.
Bob Dylan. one of the great voices of all time in American song. Yeah. It's a weird sounding dude rambling on about stuff. Good for him.
Yeah.
Not that I don't appreciate it, but. Bob Dylan, Bob Dylan gets so much respect. It's like Bob Dylan is in that, like, A list of musical artists.
Mm-hmm.
Not for me.
Not really for me either.
Because I can hear albums that aren't for me that I still like, oh, that's a good album.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why Bob Dylan is an all-time great.
I don't know.
A rolling stone.
The voice is unique. A lot of hot takes.
The voice is unique. Joni Mitchell, Blue. Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? Mm. We have our first Taylor Swift appearance at number 18. You want to guess the album?
Oh, okay.
I think it's her best album. So
you think it's her best album?
So we're good here.
Can I have a little bit of a guess? Like, would it be within, like, the first few albums or, like, the newer ones? A hint.
Probably right in the middle, yeah.
Probably right in the middle, 1989.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. that'll nail it down. Dr. Dre, The Chronic at 19. The Beach Boys, Pet Sounds at number 20.
Okay.
I'm gonna raise my hand.
Beach Boys.
I don't think I've heard like that album front to back.
Oh, I have not.
Yeah.
But I do like the Beach Boys. I went through a whole phase.
That's the first one where I'm like, I don't think I've heard that album.
Yeah.
In its entirety. No, that's my phone going nuts. I can only presume.
I thought that was my.
No,
for a second.
I can only assume people are reacting to the the spicy red hot.
Oh
takes.
No!
Apple Music's 100 best albums of all time. Radiohead, by the way, has two in the top 35.
Oh my goodness!
That's a lot of Radiohead love.
That's a lot of Radiohead.
Because you're like, a lot of music has been made.
Yeah.
Over forever. You know, you got a lot to choose from here. We got to step aside because we got Lane Casadane coming up on the other side. We'll get back to sports. Talk about sports. We'll get back to sports with Lane Casadante. Max Scholga's back at VCU. Still processing that one. Forget top 100. Still processing VCU. Getting Max Scholga back. Lane on the other side. This is 910 The Fan at 105.1 FM. number two underway. MP on the mic, my interview with Cleveland Farrell yesterday after Washington Commanders OTA practice in about 20 minutes. Right now, though, we're excited to welcome in, as we do on Thursdays, Lane Casadante, sports director at CBS 6. Lane, good morning. What's up?
Good morning, Mr. Phillips. How is everyone?
Well, I got to say, everybody's a little pep in the step. Max Schulga's coming back. That one was not on my bingo card for yesterday.
It wasn't, and as is so often the case with the transfer portal and NIL and all the different little things that go into decisions like that, there's a lot of moving parts. And for a change, you know, it works out for one of our teams. and there were a lot of people that technically he never left, obviously, but there were a lot of people that were not counting on him coming back. So that's very good news for the Rams.
No doubt. It's I'm both obviously thrilled for the Rams because that makes them, you know, a significantly better team immediately. Also, a lot of questions here, right? Like, with high school kids, they sign the NIL letter, at which point they're going to the school. Like, that's the commitment. Do we need the version of that for transfer portal world? It just feels kind of squishy right now.
Well, there's so much that's undecided because there are so many lawsuits that are pending and there are settlements, and every day we get a new notification that, oh, this conference has settled, the NCAA has settled with this giant, I don't even know what to call it, but it's some sort of antitrust, or,
yeah,
you know, it's the lawsuit that the main conferences and the NCAA are facing, that they are working to settle because they'd rather pay $2 billion than $7 billion. And who wouldn't among us, right? So there's, but with all of this, and I actually, there's so many moving parts to this. And I actually thought, and I have heard this in the recent days, that the NCAA and all of the players that are going to play for these institutions, you keep hearing the phrase collective bargaining. And we hear that a lot with professional sports. And unfortunately, college is kind of headed in that direction. And the players think they want that. You know, yes, oh, we'd love to collectively bargain. We want a seat at the table. We want a voice in our in our futures and all this other stuff. And I caution them to be careful what you wish for, because once they start being treated as employees and no longer students, that's a completely different ball game. And when you get lawyers involved, you're going to have contracts. And in those contracts, I have to believe that the schools are going to demand that these kids, okay, you can transfer, but if you do, you got to stay for 2 years. Or something along those lines. Because when you're treated as an employee, that's different than being a student. And I don't know how long it's going to take this merry-go-round before it stops, but college sports could look vastly different, and it may not always benefit the players.
Well, and it's going to take so long because of all these lawsuits. I mean, I think the Title IX lawsuit's the next big one, right? If you say every year the colleges can give the students, the student athletes, if that's even the term we're using now, $21, $22 million out of that pool. I think there's, one, the schools are going to want to disproportionately give that to football, right? Because football brings in the revenue. Two, I think there's very legitimate argument to be made that Title IX says, wait a second, it's got to be distributed equally, at which point that's kind of unequal in and of itself because there is no women's football, right? So now you've got the women's sports carrying more of the load, and it's all fascinating, but I think we're a long ways from resolution here, even if everybody wants to pretend we're getting close.
Yes, and you're right. That is the next big shoe that will drop, and I'm quite sure that Title IX advocates, and they're not entirely wrong, but that's what they're waiting for is, you know, okay, let's see the dollar amount and let's see what they do with it. And if they don't do what we like with it, then we're going to pass legislation of our own. And, you know, good compromise leaves everybody a little upset. I don't see a compromise that is going to please the majority of people anywhere in our near future. Now, will it stop the games next year? No, it won't. And you're right. By the time this is all litigated and legislated and settled upon, the canvas and the landscape of college sports is going to be completely changed anyway, and the kids that it will affect might be in kindergarten this fall. So that's how long it could take.
I mean, good on the kids who are going to get back pay for NIL. I did not see that one coming either, that part of this deal is college athletes who were around over the last decade are going to get back pay for missing NIL. That's you know, going out into the workforce at you know, in your early 20s, and you get a check in the mail one day. That's a nice little way to start.
That's good lawyering. You always, you know, take care of back pay, because that will, okay, there, that takes care of another group of lawsuits. But how far do you go back?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you played in the 80s, you know, where's yours? Did NIL not exist back then? No, it didn't. So if there's a line of demarcation, then I get it. But if they don't have one, they better figure it out real quick.
They got not a lot of time to do that and a lot to take care of, for sure. Link Casadante from CBS 6. Always enjoy having him join us on Thursdays. Lane, let's talk baseball for a second, because the Yankees and Orioles, man, I think this is going to be a really fun summer.
It could be. As a lifelong and somewhat diehard Yankee fan, I'm always a skeptic of that team. And I will point to the fact that they really haven't played some of the better teams in the majors yet. They have not. They played Baltimore one series, dropped 3 out of 4. You know, no harm in that. Baltimore's a very, very good team.
Yeah,
but you're going to see they have to win today just to split a home series with the Mariners, who are in first place in the West. But outside of that, they haven't played the Rangers yet. They have a massive road trip coming up in the next couple of weeks, where they're on the West Coast for, I think, at least 10 games, like a week and a half straight. They haven't played, like I said, they haven't played the Rangers, no Dodgers, no Braves, no, they haven't even played the Red Sox yet. So I'm cautiously optimistic about what they've done. And what the Yankees have really done is they've gotten really, really good pitching, which they weren't quite expecting, especially without Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
And the Orioles are just a masterclass in how you build a roster, how you scout, how you draft, and how you develop. And they're, you know, if they can sustain the economics of such a roster and such a, you know, such a group of talent, they're going to be good for a long time.
Well, Juan Soto is going to need to get paid this offseason. I do feel quite confident about that much. And you mentioned Gerrit Cole. They're talking about him coming back next month. That'd be a heck of a pitching lineup going into the postseason, where, as you know, that's all that matters. You get punch your ticket to the postseason and get a couple hot pitchers, you're good to go.
Yeah, it's like the hot goalie in the NHL playoffs, right?
Yep.
You only need really two, maybe three guys to be on their game every time out. And Luis Gil has performed above and beyond expectations for the Yankees this year. Nestor Cortes, as long as he's home, he pitches well. He's terrible on the road. Marcus Stroman has been a nice pickup for them, although I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with him, just because, again, the cynic that I am. But yeah, their pitching has really led the way, and their bullpen, outside of the implosion they had the other night, has been lights out as well, with Clay Holmes, who, you know, everybody thought, okay, he's a decent setup man, but you never really thought he had the stuff to be a closer. And so far, again, with the exception of Monday night, he's been lights out.
Now, I know you're a New York guy, so your Yankees fandom is acceptable. Do you have a hockey preference as well? Are you a Rangers guy?
I actually grew up as a Canadiens fan, because
okay,
I went to college up near Montreal, and I was a huge Patrick Waugh and Stephane
yes.
Richer fan when I was in high school and college. But I, to be honest, I haven't kept up. The only team I do keep up with is the Rangers. So if I have to pull, if I'm pulling for anybody, I'm pulling for them, because I have a lot of close friends that are big Rangers fans. So
and the only Richmonder in the NHL.
That's right, yes. Zach Jones, did a sit-down with him a couple of summers ago. A great kid. His dad, Rob Jones, a longtime trainer for the Renegades, for those of you in your audience who remembers those heydays back in the mid and late 90s. So, yeah, you can pull for Zach as well. But, yeah, got to do a little better than they did last night.
Ooh, it's a long series. That's what they say there. Montreal's on my bucket list for sure. I see a Canadiens game. That's got to be a treat.
It is. I mean, it's kind of like, and it's like going to baseball at Wrigley or Fenway or Yankee Stadium. It's like football at Lambeau. If it isn't the birthplace of the sport, it's the, you know, the cradle where they spent their formative years, and the people up there are just so knowledgeable and so appreciative of the game. And Montreal is a fantastic city anyway, if you can deal with all the French people. and it's so, yes, if you've never been, I encourage everybody to go. I would say go in the summer, but that's not hockey season, so choose and plan accordingly.
There you go. Lane Casadante, sports director at CBS 6. Anything we can look forward to at CBS 6 this weekend?
Hey, give it up for Randolph Macon Baseball hosting a Super Regional for the first time in program history. Now, again, the Super Regional round did not exist in Division III only until a couple of years ago, but Ray Hedrick, the head coach, when he was on the committee, pushed to get this round of the playoffs in just so it was more in line with the Division I playoff system and tournament bracket that they have. So they are hosting Adrian College out of Southwest Michigan. It's a little school just north of Toledo that is very, very used to being at this level of the postseason. So should be a really good series up in Ashland this weekend. Starts tomorrow at noon, and we wish the Jackets the best of luck.
Let's go, Jackets. All they do is win in all the sports now, apparently, and don't want to jinx it, but looking good to get a local team in the NCAA baseball tournament as well, with VCU and UR facing each other tomorrow morning as well. Lane, thank you for the time. Have a great weekend, a holiday weekend, and we will catch up soon.
All right, Mike, thanks for having me. Have a great weekend, everybody.
There he goes. We're back after this. We'll play my interview with Cleland Farrell, talk a little bit of Commanders, and keep you up to speed on the NBA and NHL. All that on the other side of this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Update from Louisville. The Scottie Scheffler story was all over last week, obviously, the Scottie Scheffler arrest. The Louisville Police Department is holding a press conference right now, sharing that they have taken corrective action against the officer involved for not having his body cam on during the interaction because there is no video. The Athletic is reporting that they're going to release video from another officer that corroborates Scottie Scheffler's account of events, not the officer's.
So Scottie's going to end up, what, being a good guy in this situation?
The Athletic is reporting that Scottie's version of events is the correct one, not the officer's.
Wow.
And the police department is going to show video today corroborating that. Now, I don't think Scottie will will counter-sue or anything. Like, I think he'll be fine to just walk away from it. But
right.
That's how you end up with those big settlements right there. That's the TV lawyers are all over stuff like that.
I just can't believe this whole thing happened. Like, he was literally stretching in a jail cell and then made it to his tea time. And did pretty darn good.
The whole thing's insane.
Yeah.
The whole, the world number one golfer got arrested at the golf course, thrown in jail, came back, and played around.
My sneaky funny part about this is that Schauffele won, right?
Yeah.
Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
He sounds very similar, the last name.
Oh,
right?
Scheffley and Scheffler. Okay.
Right.
Like,
I gotcha. You could botch that and be like, wait, the guy that went to jail won?
Yeah. He's like finished second at a bunch of tournaments too, so it's good for him. Clear out the competition through arrest, through whatever means necessary, and then come back, win the tournament. What I want to talk to you about, of course, during today's crosstalk is Max Schulga. Why don't we hit the sounder? We haven't hit the sounder in a while. Let's hit the crosstalk sounder and do a little crosstalk.
Two hosts enter.
Let's get it on right now, all right?
Two hosts will also leave, but in between, all bets are off. This is Crosstalk with MP and AWOD.
Okay, okay, let's get this show on the road.
It took me several minutes to realize it was not a prank or a bit.
Yeah, right.
That Max Schulga was coming back. How does this change your expectations for this team next year?
Oh, completely changes everything. I mean, now you're talking about a legit A-10 championship squad coming back, a team that made it to the finals, had, you know, the deficit down by one with under a minute to go and had the ball, had a chance to win it, had a lot of comeback victories during the season, couldn't get it done there, then made a deep NIT run, got the win at Villanova. Max Schulga turns down Villanova to return to VCU. I mean, this is huge. This is I'm going to talk about it on my show. VCU baseball advanced to the A-10 semifinals.
Yeah.
This is bigger news.
This is 100% bigger news.
Yes.
This is an immediate all A-10. Like, he is maybe the front runner for player of the year just by coming back in the A-10. I don't think that's a stretch. He was one of the league's best players last year, and I think will be, you know, maybe your preseason favorite to be the league's best player this year. You're good at guard, Max Zeb Joe. You're good there. That's a lineup you're rolling out too.
Yep.
Jack Clark obviously starts. Firm at the five? Is that where we're at here?
I believe that this coaching staff has a lot of confidence in Christian Furman, and here's why you should too.
I'm ready.
He just became a completely different player from the freshman that went to the A-10 championship game that was playing less than a minute a game to the player he was this sophomore year, where you could count on him to start games. Maybe you couldn't count on him to close some games, all right? I'll be honest. You know, he missed a few bunnies. He had a few turnovers that maybe cost us one game at Dayton, right? But you could count on him to start games, and he made a lot of improvement. If he makes the same level of improvement, he's going to be maybe close to a star in the A-10 because of how much he improved.
That makes sense. He can make the stride into being a consistent star. I'd still like one more guy there. I'm unclear now when transfer season begins and ends. Like, can Max pull another okie doke? I'm scared now.
Yeah.
I'm scared that any day we'll wake up to comings and goings. When does this end?
I don't know. You know, supposedly you signed the national letter of intent that you're going to play there. Toby the Wall is not going to change his mind. He's at Virginia Tech.
He's done.
I've heard that's confirmed. But you know, you're in the Wild West.
Yeah.
This is the Wild West. And Coach Odom, you know, went out there and wrangled Max Scholga back from Villanova.
and what if Jamari Thomas actually was on this roster? You're still taking Max back.
Yeah.
And now, right? Is Zeb the odd man out now, right? Like, that would have become weird, too, because now you can't get into the portal if you weren't in the portal. You can only leave the portal. No, nobody knows.
I think Zeb was 100% always coming back. I mean, Coach Odom.
Yeah.
Coach Odom, what I love about this is that Coach Odom said that he knew in December that Zeb and Joe Bamisil were returning, and the plan was always for 1 year of Max for him to go pro. He chose not to go pro.
Yeah.
Why not bring him back then?
I would, if he had gone pro anywhere, Europe, NBA, G League, whatever, I would have wished him the best. We would have cheered him on. It did not sit great that he went to a different college program.
Yeah, especially one that we beat. I mean, like, let's just be honest, right? I'm going to puff my chest out and say VCU went on the road, beat a Big East opponent.
It doesn't feel great for the future. Like, because VCU, look, smaller conference, A-10, smaller conference than the Big East. But this notion that we couldn't rally enough financial support to keep Max, that I took that as not a great sign, right? It's like when Shaka kept, you know, flirting with it, he got his salary raised every year. And eventually, you know, Ed McLaughlin made the statement, right? Like, you know, we promised Shaka more than we had. We just figured if we had Shaka, we'd get it later.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, how much of this is money? How much of it is fit with the coaching staff, right? Like, is there a chance that Max went up to Villanova, did a few workouts, and didn't like the pointers he was getting? Likes the way Coach Odom coached him, right? Yeah. I mean, there is some loyalty there, too, right?
But also, he's got one chance here to take care of himself. Like, you can't expect him to play for free. And I think there's enough VCU fans and enough businessman, like, you know, we don't make enough money to contribute meaningfully here, but there's enough business people in town that this is a good of the city thing, having a guy like Max Scholga in your uniform playing in your city.
I mean, this is just so huge. I mean, he has a chance to be A-10 player of the year.
Absolutely. I think he's the favorite to be A-10 player of the year right out of the gate.
I don't know. It's going to be tough. Eric Reynolds returning.
Sure.
That's going to be huge. I'm sure there's guys we're forgetting about, like Dayton. I don't think we know what Daron Holmes is planning to do yet, right? I mean,
I'd written him off already. No,
I mean, he's going to be in the NBA draft. I'd say like 90%.
Oh wow!
But yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation. What's going on with everybody, basically?
I mean, I guess he could still come back
because the latest I was reading is not he's not going to be a first round pick.
Ooh, him back at Dayton, obviously, just send him the award now, basically. That would be an interesting one. I think Loyola will probably be really good next year. They seem to have figured out this A-10 thing.
And they're going to have Jalen DeLoach. Don't forget about that. That's going to be a good one.
Rather forget about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, transfer portal giveth and it taketh away, you know.
AWOD Radio today. What's up?
Oh, we got a lot to get to on the show today. Here's an interesting tease for you, all right? I saw a tweet going around where people were listing their top five favorite sounds in sports. So I had Stubby over here compile a list of my five favorite sports sounds.
Will we hear them?
You will be able to hear them. See, it's an audio medium, baby.
Oh, man, that's such a good segment. I love it.
Like, thinking off the top of your head, like you think of the crack of a bat, what do you think of?
Field goal doink.
Field goal doink. I can confirm that did not make the list.
Oh! I started the list. The ball going through the net, the swoosh. In basketball, I'll take that over like a rim rattle. You know, mm-hmm. So many good bats. I love the sound of dribbling. I hate the sound of shoes squeaking on the basketball court. That's one of my five least favorite sports sounds. Like when the court's mic'd up and you hear the squeak, 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 squeak when they're running around.
Yeah.
That's one of my least favorite
sports
sounds.
That was the entire bubble in Orlando.
Right? Yeah, right?
That's why I don't count that trophy for LeBron. There were squeaks in the background.
Yeah, but he won the in-season title this year.
What
do you have to say about that
hang
now,
the banner.
Adam?
Hang the banner.
Best sounds in sports. I love it. They're going to be
That'll be at 12:45.
Like tennis, you know, is it abroad? All sports?
I covered all sports.
Yeah.
You know, obviously this is my opinion, so
sure.
I want people to chime in, 833-804-0910, or tweet us your thoughts, but this is my personal list.
I love it. I'm excited for that. We're back tomorrow with the Friday show, then we'll take a holiday weekend. Hopefully you will as well. MP on the mic if you missed anything today. Grab it on the free Odyssey app. It's got the rewind button. We're back tomorrow. This is MP on the mic. You're listening to 910 The Fan, not 105.1 FM.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.